Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Yesterday I'm driving in the car and I'm listening to Phillies baseball on WKOK. And I thought that was just one of the really great moments that I know the Phillies lost 6-2, but to have WKOK on News Radio 1070 and hear Major League Baseball on again, I thought was tremendous. I was more than happy to say, you know what? No show today because we've got the Phillies on was a happy thing to do. Great thing to do. Great to have you with us. Normally on Mondays, we tell you we're brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. So I'm not going to let the our good friends, the Purdy's, get by without their sponsor mentioned. I know it's Tuesday. The Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament is on the horizon. I enjoy that event so much. There are two golf tournaments that I circle every year on my personal calendar that I can't wait to be a part of. Coaches versus Cancer, obviously, is one here. With Patrick Chambers, but the other one is the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament. We need to get foursomes for that. We need to get foursomes. And I want to get the afternoon filled up. We're going to play in the morning flight, I know that. But, we're going to tell you more and more as time goes because we want to get that filled up for May 4th, Wednesday, May 4th. At the beautiful Susquehanna Valley Country Club, we are anxious for that. Wow. Yeah, it's less than a month away, too. It's great. All right. The national championship game. First of all, we welcome you. And, Sean, we welcome you after the three-day siesta that you took. And we've seen pictures of where you went.
Not much to write honestly, home to mom about, no.
Honestly, I wouldn't have posted that, but that's just me.
But you're right. Yesterday it was refreshing for the first time in 32 years hearing a Phillies regular season baseball game on WKOK.
So yes.
161 to go.
Absolutely. So we're looking forward to much more as time goes. Next, the game last night. That's why I love college basketball. Last night's game is truly one of the great games I have ever watched start to finish. It was just a great game. It was high-level hoops at 20 paces last night. I had said, we talked with Dick Girardi on Thursday, and I had made the point that Villanova was the least talked about team going into the Final Four. And I said, it doesn't really matter if you're the least talked about team on Thursday. It matters whether you're the most talked about team on Tuesday. They are the most talked about team on Tuesday because of the brilliance of that game last night. And it's made brilliant because of how North Carolina played, about Marcus Paige hitting the corner three and then the off-balance three. The off-balance three, to me, brought back so many memories. That's the exact kind of shot that Joe Crispin hit against Michigan State in the 2001 Big Ten tournament that allowed the Nittany Lions to beat second-ranked Michigan State in the Big Ten tournament at the United Center. You combine that, the fact that the national anthem was sung on Saturday. Did you see who sung the national anthem?
Very impressive.
The Villanova representative was Carly Crispin, Joe and John Crispin's little sister. The number of times that I watch Carly Crispin run around the Jordan Center floor after a basketball game or any game, when she was just a youngster. And Sue Crispin, the mom, has always been a music teacher. And to see Carly up there with three others, they did a beautiful rendition of the national anthem. So
when she was really cool. So when she was yay high, she had the singing chops way back then?
Don't know. She was too busy running around the floor. Hi, Miss Jones. I didn't hear her sing. I saw her run around a lot at banquets, things like that. But it was one of those. He just sat there and I watched that. That's so neat. And then Cumberland Posey ended up making the Basketball Hall of Fame, along with Shaquille O'Neal and Allen Iverson and Tom Izzo, who richly deserves it, among others. Cumberland Posey is already in the Baseball Hall of Fame for his contributions in the 20s and 30s. In Negro League Baseball. He's now going to go into the Basketball Hall of Fame. Now, why am I so thrilled that Cumberland Posey is going into the Basketball Hall of Fame? He's a former Penn State basketball player. Cumberland Posey played his college basketball at Penn State before then breaking barriers in professional basketball. It's just one of the really cool, neat things about the great history and the great culture of Penn State. Okay? Remember, Cumberland Posey was a student athlete here in the teens and early 20s. Okay? Not 1955. Special. And he's going to go into the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame. So it's a really, some really cool few days. And you know what's really neat is now we get to talk about the Masters. Oh my goodness! Now Matt Leon's going to be on today's show, and then you've lined up a special guest in the 4:06 half hour, Sean.
We did. Former teammate of Villanova head coach Jay Wright, of course. People here across the central Susquehanna Valley know Jay Wright, a graduate of Bucknell, and Jay's teammate from the early 80s, Ed Siegel, is going to join us.
Yep. Penn State has only faced a Jay Wright-coached team once ever, and it wasn't at Villanova. It was at Hofstra. And it was in that 2000-2001 season, and Penn State beat Hofstra to win the ECAC Holiday Festival at Madison Square Garden. Hofstra took a shot from about 30 feet to try and tie the game, final shot, and it hit the back rim and went away, so no overtime. Penn State won the game by 3. And Jay had taken Hofstra to the NCAAs, I think, with Speedy Claxton the year before. And then he got that addition of Hofstra to the NCAAs, and then after that season was over with, he took the Villanova job. There are a lot of great stats that are out there now that I use, and you try to use them judiciously. You try to pick the spot to use them. And you know, one of them is points per possession. I think that's become an interesting stat to talk about. I like to see, for example, what percentage of your points do you get from twos, threes, and the free throw line. That gives me a little feel of style of play to go with the tapes I watch. And possessions per game. Are you a high possession team at like 73, 74, 75 possessions a game? Or are you a low possession team like Virginia, which is dead last at 61 possessions per game? You just kind of, you know, ratchet it down a little bit. A stat I don't put a lot of stock in is plus minus. Now in hockey, of course, plus minus has been used for a long time, and you know, and I understand that. I'm fine with that because in hockey you're doing things in shifts. Basketball is a little different, plus minus, because let's take Marcus Paige for example. I think last night his minus for the game was a minus 3. Well, it should be. He played almost the entire game and he lost by 3, so he should be a minus 3. Okay? Not because of anything he did wrong, but if you're going to play the entire game and you lose by three, you're probably going to be in the neighborhood of what the margin of the game happens to be. But here's something that's interesting. I did, you know, and I took the stats out because, you know, let's face it, I had access to the in-house stat monitor. So I had the NCAA stat monitor, the one that they officially use in the arena. And it's more extensive than a box score. Even a box score, it's more extensive than. And on this, they, of course, you know, they extrapolate everything out, and they have plus minus on there. When you go to the individual team stats. And there was one guy in the game that was in double digits plus minus. And that was a plus 14. And it was significant, and it actually did play into the game. Guess who the guy was who was plus 14 last night? Okay, Chris Jenkins. Remember, Chris Jenkins got into foul trouble in the first half. Then Jay Wright did something very smart. He put some trust in him. He put him back in the game when Villanova was falling behind in the first half. And he played him for about 3 minutes, and then just before the under four, he took him back out again. Too often, you know, everybody has their own philosophy. Everyone has their own philosophy, so I understand that. I'm not downing anyone's philosophy. But sometimes the one thing that we do assume sometimes is that if we put them back in, we're going to assume they get the third foul. And you don't necessarily get the third foul. Now, you are taking the risk of a potential of a third foul, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to happen. In this case, it didn't happen. It also was not the greatest officiated game last night, but that's, you know, the weakest group on the floor was not wearing a white or a black uniform last night. So he didn't. And remember, Jenkins only played, because of the foul trouble, 21 minutes in the game. And he was plus, Villanova was a plus 14 when he was on the floor. Plus 14. And then there's Ryan Arcidiacono. There's 4.7 seconds to go after Page hit the incredible shot. I mean, was that the shot he hit in the corner for three, and then, of course, the acrobatic three on the wing. Incredibly special. But with 4.7 seconds to go, Arcidiacono came down the floor, and what did he do? Now, how often have you heard me talk about great quarterbacks or great point guards? What do they both have in common? They both know where all the chess pieces are. Great quarterbacks, well, let's go to the highest level, Manning and Brady. They know where the other 21 chess pieces are. Roethlisberger knows where the other 21 chess pieces are. You have some guys in college that have that ability too. Point guards are the same way. They know where the other 9 chess pieces are. And Arcidiacono came down the floor last night, and he knew where everybody was. He knew how far back Bryce Johnson was, and he knew where, you know, and they practiced this play many times, and it's his option. He can take that shot, or he can dish it. He saw it, and after making two unpoised plays when they were up 10, which he did, he made as poised a decision as you could ask somebody under pressure to make. Boom, down the floor. Now, if Jenkins misses the shot, so what? He misses the shot. Doesn't matter. The decision is still awesome whether he makes it or not. It becomes easier to talk about it being awesome because he made the shot. But he comes down the floor, draws a little bit, and then flips it back to him. And in stride and in rhythm, he takes the shot and he makes it. The other key point of the game was the end of the first half. There was a point where North Carolina was starting at the end of the half to get a little control of the game, and they had a breakout with a 7-point lead and missed the layup. And they missed the layup with enough time where Villanova came down, and Phil Booth, who had the game of his life in college, he had a career-high 20 last night, hit the foul line jumper and made it a 5-point game at the break. So Villanova hit the final shot of the first half, and they hit the final shot of the game. And that final shot at the end of the first half, instead of a 9-point game, it was only a 5-point game. That 4-point swing was big psychologically in terms of the mountain you had to climb to get yourself back. And then Villanova played the vast majority of the second half with the lead, which was that's always psychologically important. All right, we'll take a break. Matt Leon's going to join us next half hour. And we'll continue with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Great to have you with us on this Tuesday, the day after the Phillies opened on WKOK, the day after Villanova wins the basketball national championship in a brilliant game that was played on both sides, well coached on both sides, and one of those reasons to me why you love sports, even if you're a casual basketball fan. Now, the ratings were expected were down. It's not even the most watched game in cable history. The Kentucky-Wisconsin game actually had a slightly higher number than last night's game. With all due respect to the fine people at TBS, and TBS does a fine job. I mean, do a great job with baseball, do a great job with the tournament, the whole deal. But that game's got to be on CBS. It's got to be. It's got to be on over-the-air TV. And I know we're in a cable era, but I just feel like a game like that should have been on CBS for them. I mean, if the whole country could see that, you know, wow. But that's, you know, the contract is the contract, and I understand that they want the money and that this is part of the deal with the contract. I've got that. But it was good just to see Craig Sager, by the way, out there last night, wasn't it? He interviewed Michael Jordan. I know the mic cut in and out a little bit, but I mean, they've told Craig Sager he's got 3 to 6 months to live. And it was just great to see him there last night.
Yeah, if you get a chance to see the HBO Brian Gumbel show, the monthly show, they did a great feature on Sags about a couple weeks ago.
Oh, good. Okay. Real sports?
Yes, real sports. Yep.
Yeah. Boy, it's hard. So hard. All right, Matt Leon, next half hour. I'm going to talk with him from KYW in Philadelphia. He just got back from the Villanova celebration. No, I'm just kidding. Hey, glad to see you back. Oh, my goodness. But we're going to talk to him about what we watched last night, what we witnessed. An old teammate of Jay Wright's at Bucknell is going to join us, which we're looking forward to. That'll be really great. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about golf. I'm going to talk about a guy named Jim Herman in relation to Tiger Woods. You're like, what's that about?
True refreshment can come in many forms. But it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket. Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the Pickle Bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket. Brewer's Outlet in Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And let's give Mark Lawrence credit. Perfect bracket and pick 77-74 is the final. It really was a stunning run. He edged out Wakeman by only one game. I'm not going to get into the game she missed. She's still bitter about it. Our thanks to our good friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And by the way, the Truman H. Purdy Memorial Golf Tournament, a must start for this guy right here, is May 4th. I can't wait to be at the Susquehanna Valley Country Club. We're going to do the show out there that day. Sean Carey signing autographs. Can't wait to watch that all unfold. I know you don't like to brag, but I thought I'd mention it.
No. Mark's not bragging either for that perfect bracket, by the way.
No. That's one thing about Lawrence. Very humble. But perfection must be recognized.
Yeah.
Time now for This Day in Sports History. Then Matt Leon from KYW in Philadelphia on the Villanova win. On this day in 1965, the color of National Football League penalty flags used by officials was changed from white to bright gold to work in conjunction with color TV. 1967, Wilt Chamberlain of the Philadelphia 76ers set an NBA playoff record with 41 rebounds in a game. Villanova didn't get 41 rebounds in two games. That's a team. 1970, best hockey player I ever saw in my life was Bobby Orr. And Robert Gordon Orr became the first NHL defenseman to win the Art Ross Trophy as the top scorer in the NHL. He had 139 points. He had 37 goals and 102 assists. 1984, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, then of the Lakers, became the all-time NBA regular season scoring leader when he broke Wilt Chamberlain's record of 31,419 career points. 1987, Doug Jarvis of the Hartford Whalers completed his 12th NHL season and his 962nd consecutive game. He is the record holder. He is the Iron Man. He then played two more games in 87-88 to get the record to 964. 1999, Barry Bonds was walked intentionally for the 270th time in his career, breaking the record of Hank Aaron. And that is this day in sports history. With that now, we switch gears to Philadelphia and bring in Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. Young Leon, welcome back, sir. It's great to hear you again.
Well, I'm doing well. Not as good as Jay Wright, but I'm doing well.
Yeah. Matt just got home, by the way, from out there on the main line. That team is a well-put-together team, but what did it tell you about Archie Adakino as to how, in the biggest moment, how he handled 4.7 seconds and the thought process of something you've watched for 4 years now?
I mean, it tells you, number one, it does tell you that they worked on that play every day in practice.
No doubt.
Since he's been there, because it was all reflexive. There was no hesitation. They knew exactly how it was going to play out, how the reads went and such. But it's about the win, because you and I, you've seen a lot of talented kids, a lot of experienced kids in that situation. Commit a charge, throw the ball away, force up a shot in a double team. I mean, to know exactly who to go to in the situation to have that type of presence, it tells you how special that kid is, and really how special this team is. This march through the tournament, I've seen a lot of great teams win the NCAA tournament. I've seen Cinderella teams win the NCAA tournament. I don't know that I've ever seen a team for an entire six games of an NCAA tournament play at its maximum efficiency, at the top of its ceiling. It was really something to behold.
What people don't realize is that they played the single toughest schedule in the tournament. You look at the S-curve, and on the S-curve, it isn't even close as to who played the toughest schedule in the six games.
Oh, no. I mean, they didn't get a break the entire tournament. I mean, they got their 15 seed in the first round as a 2 against UNC Asheville. But from that point on, two number one seeds, a number two, a number three, and even in the second round, they got an Iowa team that was a 7 seed that had been ranked in the top 5, I think, at one point during the season.
They were fourth when Penn State beat them here.
Yeah, I mean, so it couldn't have been a tougher road And, you know, I mean, last night they went on the three at the buzzer, and the Kansas game was a grind. But, I mean, the rest of the games were blowouts. I mean, the rest of the games were victory laps. I mean, the Oklahoma was one of the single greatest dismantlings of a good team I've ever seen.
Yeah. Not only that, this is what really impressed me about Villanova, and I don't think it's been talked about a lot. Usually teams have a formula, and if they stick to that formula, that's how they play, that's how they win. Villanova played at varying paces in the tournament depending on the opponent. They kind of ratcheted down a little bit, tried to against North Carolina and did. They ratcheted it down against Kansas and won. But then other teams, they were able to play run and gun and free and wide open. I was impressed by the fact that they could beat you at any pace that they chose.
Oh, no question. And the you were impressed that, I mean, for the most part, the shots were flying. I think they shot 58% for the tournament, which is just absurd, especially as a perimeter-oriented team. But the Kansas game, I think they shot about 40%. I mean, they weren't making their shots, and they did it by clamping down at the other end. They were just phenomenal defensively throughout the tournament. I mean, you saw what they did against Oklahoma and Buddy Hield. I mean, not only did he not factor into it, not make shots, he wasn't a factor. I mean, he wasn't even getting the ball. I saw something like the last 13 minutes of the game, he didn't even attempt a shot. I mean, just, and it's a team that you can just tell has played so much basketball together, is completely bought into what they're being told to do and what they're doing, complete trust in one another. It just was remarkable. And I think we talked a couple of weeks ago when they beat Iowa in that second round game, because that had been the big bugaboo. They hadn't gotten out of the first weekend in years. Mm-hmm. When they did that, I thought it was palpable, the relief you saw on faces, you know, the video of Jay Wright pumping the fist coming into the locker room. And once they kind of got the shackles of that off, you know, I said they were going to be a tough out. I don't know if I necessarily believe this, but you could just tell that they were playing free and easy, and they were playing to their ceiling, which is just incredible.
It is a city that's had some good moments, but not championship moments for a long time. I mean, the Flyers haven't won the Cup since, what, 75? The Sixers haven't won the championship since 83, but Iverson took them, obviously, to the final against the Lakers. The Eagles haven't won since 60, but they've been to two Super Bowls. And, of course, the Phillies were the last ones to win, winning in 2008. What did this win last night do for the emotion in the city?
It helps a lot. It's still can be so parochial in this town. You saw that, like, Temple and St. Joe's people that begrudgingly kind of nod their head about the victory, but there's not the all buy-in and stuff like that. But it really, it does a lot to kind of, it's been a while of being basically, you know, you mentioned the Phillies in 08, and you've probably got to go back to 2011, the last time that Philadelphia fans really had something to cheer for, when the Phillies, the last year that they were good. So it was very important from that standpoint. They're going to have a parade in the city Wildcats on Friday.
Yep.
And, you know, it's very cathartic. I mean, it's we're just so used to disappointment around here, Steve, and it's just see not just a win, but to have a win like that. I mean, that you just talk about the apex of emotion. And I mean, let me ask you this. You're a scholar of college basketball. I mean, this is Lorenzo Charles-esque, no? As far as the moment?
At the moment, yes. Villanova's a better team than that team.
No, absolutely. Yeah, but
and I think it is that moment, but even better, and the reason why it's even better is because of what Paige did. What Paige did. And Joe Crispin hit that same shot against Michigan State when Penn State knocked them off in the Big Ten tournament in 2001. That same kind of off balance coming down and then release on a three. Joe Crispin hit that same shot from the wing, that right wing, against Michigan State. And it was phenomenal, and it put Penn State in front to stay with 20 seconds to go. Paige hits the three in the corner, then hits the off balance three. And that's what made the Jenkins moment even better than the NC State game, because there was no moment that Houston hit that made you go, oh, here we go. I mean, it was just this was different because of Page's shot. It, you know, the opponent, a number one seed, the whole deal, all the way through. This was a better moment.
No, it really, and I mean, everything left. I mean, they're up 10 with, what, 4:47 to go, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, and North Carolina just starts kind of systematically cutting it down, and then they tie it, and everything's pointing towards the Tar Heels. And everybody, you're thinking if it goes overtime, North Carolina's got all the momentum here. They could really be in trouble. And to just have, you know, that play and, all right, here we go, you know, and this is what they do once again every day in practice, and it showed really something. I mean, it's what college basketball, it's what the tournament's all about. It's what makes it so, because you can't create that. Something like that just has to happen, and to see it unfold in front of your eyes like that is just magical.
It's not a best of seven series. It's that one shot at it. And I think on top of it, when I look at this, it's a little different too this time, because really outside of Bryce Johnson, there really aren't a lot of pros out in the court. I mean, you know, maybe. I mean, they're going to be got almost all. They're going to play pro basketball, but many of them are going to be in either the D League or Europe. And you had older teams out on the court playing this game, and I thought that was significant.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, kind of our discussion earlier, I think that experience, you know, allows a Villanova to run that play with 4.7 seconds go length of the floor, and, you know, allows them to weather, you know, a North Carolina blowing it. I mean, that's a big deal in a national championship game, blowing a 10-point lead in the final 5 minutes. I mean, that can be disastrous. And to come back and to hit that shot and to banish that unbelievable 3-point shot by Page to basically footnote status is really, really something.
Right. And you know what's interesting about that is that during the, when they lost the 10-point lead, Archie Dacono made a couple of uncharacteristic turnovers that made it seem like for one of the few times he kind of lost his poise a little bit, and then he makes the incredibly poised play when you needed it.
No, that's, I mean, the one turnover on the long pass underneath when he was looking for Ochefu, that's what you really think, oh boy, the sky's falling here. Like, this is just screaming Philadelphia heartbreak. Yeah, they're going to come down, hit a three, it's going to go to overtime, or something even more absurd is going to happen, and they're going to get a 4-point play or something like that. Believe me, every Philadelphia fan, every Villanova fan ran every absurd possibility through their mind as that's unfolding. But, you know, now it's all, everybody can laugh about it because for the first time since 85, they've won the national title.
I thought a big moment in the game that hasn't really been talked about was actually the end of the first half.
I agree.
Yeah, 4-point swing there at the end of the half where Carolina had a fast break layup, which they didn't get many of last night, which is normally a bread and butter for them. And they turn it. Was it Booth that hit the one at the wire?
Yeah.
Booth had had the game of his life last night. But to me, that 4-point swing set the second half up for them.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, because they cut it to 5 instead of 9. And it's just a mental thing, like you said. And you're going in with some bounce in your step. And then they took control leading up to that 10-point lead with 5 minutes left. Yeah, no, it gets lost in so many layers of dramatics and excitement and all, but I absolutely agree with you. When it happened, you're like, oh, that could be big. That could really be big.
Yeah, it was. And you know what? That's why we love sports. You know what's really cool? Now you're done with that saying, okay, let's breathe. Let's watch the Masters. All right.
Absolutely.
It's not bad. Hey, Matt, thanks so much. Great perspective. We really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Take care, sir.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. A former Jay Wright teammate, Bucknell's own, next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Our number 1-800-795-9565. Your home for the Philadelphia Phillies, News Radio 1070 WKOK. And it's great to have everybody on board here today. 1-800-795-9565. I'd like to jump in, hear your comments, questions, whatever they may be. Last night was a great night. We're going to talk more about it in the next half hour. And also, I'm going to take a little bit in the final half hour. I want to talk just a little bit about Tiger Woods and the Masters coming up. He's not going to play in the Masters, obviously. But I'm going to relate it to a guy by the name of Jim Herman. You're like, Jim Herman? Who's Jim Herman? And he just won the Shell Houston Open at the age of 37 and was in tears talking with Steve Sands on NBC afterward about what it meant. We're going to talk a little bit about that in the final half hour, relating this to the really well-written article by Alan Shipmuck of Sports Illustrated, the cover story on Tiger Woods and the and where he is right now. And no matter what, he is going to be a figure that looms over every tournament, whether he plays in it or not.
I wonder why he waited until like 8 o'clock last Friday night to officially make the statement he was not going to play in Augusta this year.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe he just wanted to exhaust every option to try to at least, you know, go through every last-ditch effort to try to get in.
You know what? You read this, and I'm not so sure he's exhausting every job. You read this piece on him, and he's just like, right now, he just flat out can't play. The article mentions that he spends a good chunk of his day, you know, of course, he's rehabbing, obviously, but playing video games. I don't know. It's sad.
Oh, it definitely is. I think sad. Even just the casual sports fan would just love to see him make one more surge, one more time to take at least one more major. He may not touch Jack's record, but just to relive that amazing dominance that he had in the 10-plus years ago.
From 1997 through, 2009. So let's say 13... That's 14 seasons. 13 seasons.
Hey, what was that U.S. Open champ? Was it 08, 09?
08.
Out in California.
08. But then he lost in the playoff. Not in the playoff. He lost the PGA championship to Y.E. Yang. Like, what the heck? You know, because he'd been 14 for 14 in closing out majors that he led at the end of round three. And then Yang beat him. And one of the reasons he beat him is that Woods had a chance to tie him. And he took what is normally an 8-foot automatic Tiger Woods putt, and he wasn't even in the neighborhood. And that shocked everybody, and may have even shocked him. He wasn't even in the neighborhood. It wasn't like, oh, he just slid it by, or oh, it hung on the cup. Like, he just flat out missed it. Where you sat back and went, whoa, that wasn't even close. And we'll talk a little bit about that because the article was fascinating. And it was fascinating and it was sad at the same time. And then you watch this, you watch Jim Herman go out at the age of 37. And Jim Herman, a week ago today, never thought he was going to Augusta National. Jim Herman, a week ago today, probably packed enough clothes to get through Houston. Now he's taking the winner's check and going over to Nordstrom and Neiman Marcus saying, I need more stuff. I'm going to Georgia. Jim Herman now gets a 2-year exemption, which means he doesn't have to go to Q school. He's in the U.S. Open. He's 37 years old. There's an appreciation for this that is just a bit different. We're also going to talk next half hour about Roy Williams and the media. It was a contentious run by North Carolina in terms of the press conferences. I think I know why. I think it's because of the NCAA hovering around North Carolina, the soccer, basketball, and there's one other program that's really deeply involved. I know football's involved to a point. One of those classes, I think, was a... They had 19 individuals in that class where it is alleged that you didn't have to take a test, write a paper, read a book, or even show up. And of the 19, 18 were current football players and one was a former football player. That's what's been alleged. And, of course, Rashad McCants And I did Rashad McCann's first ever college game. It was against Penn State. Has no love for Roy Williams. And evidently he has just laid it all out for the NCAA.